the youth hockey league, that's all about the Canadian hockey dream, right? They're, you know, parents drive their children all around Canada because there's the dream that maybe their child might be, just by chance, maybe the next Wayne Gretzky, right? And I'm here to tell you, it's probably not.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
There's only one great one, and I think he lives in Phoenix.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight. We got a big show, got a lot to talk about in terms of all sorts of international news and university players traveling all over the globe in terms of doing good things that way. But we'll start with the gentleman who is joining us here tonight, Jason Pajak. How are you, Jason? Big weekend for you coming up.
Yeah, big weekend. You know, just coming off of one. Went and saw my first live hockey game in about 2 years, went and saw the Winnipeg Ice with a couple friends. And then, this weekend getting back in the booth, back at that same rink. So it'll be a lot of fun when the Mount Royal University Cougars come to town.
Let's maybe start there with the Bisons, because, I mean, there's a bunch of news coming out of the university about hockey and everything that's going on around that. But we'll start with the men for sure, because I made a proclamation last week on this very show that if they lost two games in a row to Regina, their season was over. They did lose two games in a row to Regina in Regina. Do you feel their season is now over?
The way that it's trending, I feel like it is most likely over. You've got 3 points. You're about halfway. You're just about at the halfway point. After this weekend, it will be the halfway point of the season. You've effectively run out of runway. The best you can get is 20 points. They get you up to 23, but you know, you've got two teams ahead of you. You've got McEwen ahead of you at 2-6. You've got Regina at 3-5. Like, you are one win. You are 3 points up on the 0-6 Trinity Western Spartans at the midpoint of the season with the schedule the Bisons have in the second half. I don't know if it, like, I want to remain positive, but I just can't see it happening.
So Manitoba, who again lost two to Regina, now trails Regina by 3 points and is also down in the season series when it comes to tiebreakers, 2-0. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I look at this and I go, Alberta's got UBC this week, so this could be a tough test for Alberta. But if Manitoba's going to roll into Alberta next week after Alberta's battle against UBC for, you know, potentially first place or at least a share of one of the top four or five spots in the conference. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Manitoba's got a chance of winning another game prior to January.
Yeah. Effectively, like, what the way it has to go. So they've got Alberta to finish off the first half, and then they open the second half at home hosting McEwen.
Right.
So you've got three back-to-back, you've got 3 weekends. You got McEwen, Trinity Western, Regina, then you finish with Saskatchewan, who is at 6-0 and, you know, has shown that they can beat up on this Bisons team. If you do not, you have to come out of those 3 weekends above 500. You have to win those season series.
It can't even be 500, though. It can't even be above 500. Like, you have to win five of those six games at least if you want to have a shot, even a prayer at having a playoff date at some point. Because when you look at what's going on in it for the rest of the month anyway, I mean, I'll just sort of pick this off as we can here. Regina's got Trinity Western this weekend. Mm-hmm. So you got to hope that Trinity Western can maybe pull one out of the fire and beat Regina for you and keep them off your tail. But beyond that, they have Calgary to finish off November, and then they go into December and you go, okay, well, Manitoba's got the bye that week because they're off. Do you
realistically,
and again, Regina's not playing that weekend either, the second, third, and fourth or whatever. They're not playing mm-hmm. either. But if Regina ends up beating Trinity Western twice, I don't see them being able to catch Regina at all in the second half, because Regina's second half isn't that bad.
Yeah. Like, effectively, if you lose that weekend series to McHugh, the season is pretty much mathematically over. You know?
Yeah. I mean,
if that was this upcoming weekend, that would put McEwen at 4-6 and the Bisons at 1-8. That puts them 3 wins ahead of the Bisons with, you know, you've got Regina who are still ahead of you. You got Trinity Western. Okay, that's 2 wins there. But then you finish off the season against Saskatchewan.
Oh, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong about Regina. I was just looking at their January schedule. That's not pretty. They have Saskatchewan followed by, oh my God, Saskatchewan followed by Mount Royal followed by UBC.
Mm-hmm.
So Regina's in tough in January where you have to make your move, right?
Yeah.
But that's the thing though, is that are you going to be that far away that you can't make a move, that even if you do win a few of those games? And again, take nothing away from McEwen. McEwen is going to give you a battle every night that they come to the rink. But even if you go 4-6, it's not good enough.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, if Regina comes out of this weekend with a pair of wins against Trinity Western, 5-5, they're 4 games up on Manitoba, you have to win 5 of those 6 games to have a chance. And I don't see this Bisons team doing that.
Well, and the final games that you play, and again, take nothing away from Regina. Regina's going to have, you know, Manitoba's going to be hosting Regina February 4th and 5th. But Manitoba plays Saskatchewan on February 11th and February 12th in Saskatchewan. We know that that's pretty much a write-off at this point. Like, Saskatchewan just looks like a different, they're on a different level.
Yeah.
You basically are looking at 8 games where, again, if you're not going 6 or 7 of 8, just call it. Like, just call it now. Mm-hmm. Wave the white flag. Because I don't see, again, it's a tough schedule. It is a very tough schedule for Regina down the road. And I get that. It's going to be impossible for me to comprehend just playing against teams that just don't let up. UBC, Saskatchewan, and Mount Royal, for example. They come in and they play Manitoba. You don't think they're going to be licking their chops when they come to Manitoba either, going, we need a win. Like, we got to get a couple of wins here. And as you said last week, Manitoba historically does not play well against Regina. So
no, they don't. Or Mount Royal. Like, basically, of the teams that they are playing from here to the end of the season, they do not have a good record against any of them except for the 2 teams they've never played before.
Well, that could change pretty quick too, depending on how we play against them. But I don't know. I look at this and I just go, that was a prime opportunity for Manitoba to really seize the season and really say, we're gonna control our own destiny here. And they legitimately just fumbled it away with 2 losses that, again, I'm not going to say that Regina played poorly. They won 3-1, and they won 3-2. Like, I mean, both games, they didn't score a ton of goals, but they played well enough defensively to keep Manitoba mm-hmm. off the board. That just can't happen if you're Manitoba.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I will say, because I'm the play-by-play guy. I'm the voice of the team. I've got to be in some way positive.
I get it.
I think losing Hughes really set this team back. I don't know the extent of his injury. I don't know what's going on. Evan and I suspected it's something to do with his groin, just based on the collision and the impacts that he took and what happened leading up to his injury. If he can come back for the second half, where you've got McEwen, Trinity Western, Regina, he can give you a chance to do it. It's up to the team in front to pull it together and, you know, be what you score when you're not on the power play and defend when you're on the penalty kill, get it done. You have a chance. But if he's not back and you're rolling out Jeremy Link with the Byron Spriggs level of minutes that he's being fed right now, I don't see them. I see this season being done basically by mid-January.
I mean, it didn't help that. I mean, again, and I'm not taking anything away from what you said. Liam Hughes did play in that 3-1 loss on Saturday, November 13th. So he did come back and play. He allowed 2 goals and they scored an empty netter, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't help, though, when you have players that are integral to this team taking 10-minute breaks at a time. Jordy Keane and Carter Dirksen were both whistled for Jordy was whistled for checking from behind. He got 2-10 for that. And then Carter Dirksen took a 2-10 at the end of the period.
This is the same problem this team has had the last few years. You know, Jonah Wasilak got in that kind of trouble. Liam Bilton got in that kind of trouble. Guys that at the time were integral to this team doing dumb things and getting penalized for it and putting the team in a bad position. And, you know, it wasn't just those two. I don't want to call out because there were many guys on those teams that were basically throwing them to the wolves with some of the boneheaded things that we're doing. And I mean, you've got Mount Royal coming in, one of the teams that is the best at getting under people's skin. You can't have that mentality coming into this weekend, especially for Jordy Keane, who hasn't had a very good season to date, who has really, I think, been surpassed on the depth chart by a lot of players that have come in. And for Carter Dirksen, you expect a lot better from him and a lot more from him than what he's done the last couple games.
And I'm not going to let him off the hook, but Ryan Carlson in the Friday game did the same thing. He took a 10-minute misconduct at the end of the second period, basically eliminated his contribution for the entire third period.
Yeah.
And you just go, at what point do you learn? Because you're down, you give up three in that period. You're up 2-0 going into the second. You give up three, you need to get one back, and Ryan Carlson's sitting in the box staring at everybody for 10 minutes. Like, that doesn't help. And I just don't understand this. This team understands what the games are about, understands where they have to be, understands what they have to do, but continually comes out and just keeps stabbing itself in its own leg. Like, it doesn't even shoot itself in the foot. It's just repeated stabbing in its own leg, because these are not mistakes that you can that need to be made. Like, you're asking for trouble at this point by going in and taking 10-minute misconducts.
Yeah, and you want to go further back. It continues on. The Saskatchewan series, Liam Schaller had a 10-minute misconduct for a hit to the head early in the second period. Like, obviously, that was well after Saskatchewan had pretty much put the game away. But still, like, I don't know what's going on with these issues. I don't know. You've got to tamp that down. It's like, this team plays incredibly well in the power play.
Right.
Like, I will give that to them when they can get the other guys to take penalties, when they can get them to do dumb things. And that's what they did against Saskatchewan. The reason that they were so strong against Saskatchewan in the Friday game was because they were getting them off their game, getting them to take penalties, letting, you know, that top power play unit get time out there. But then on the other side, they were taking boneheaded penalties the rest of the way. Like, they basically stopped getting power play opportunities in game two, and the rest of the way they've been pulling who knows what. And it's like, we expect better from this team, we expect more from what these guys can do, but they're constantly, as you said, shooting themselves in the foot.
Mount Royal against Manitoba, Saskatchewan and Calgary this weekend, which should be interesting because Calgary got thumped a little bit by Alberta. UBC and Alberta legitimately should be games of the week this week if anybody's tuning in, but Regina and Trinity Western will certainly keep an eye on as well if that's the case. Obviously, here's hoping that Manitoba can figure out Mount Royal pretty quickly, because they need something to build on right now. It's not good. It's just not good. If there is a positive, though, and I'll say this only because, again, there's a chance to really maybe for one player to use a little momentum in his own career, Colton Veloso is going to have a busy December, it seems.
Yeah, fantastic. Like, I've been a Colton Veloso fan since he arrived in Manitoba. You know, former Kootenai Ice, now Winnipeg Ice, but he's got professional experience, not a lot, but he's back here, and he's really. Evan and I have been looking at this Bison's team and trying to figure out, like, where do these guys project? Where are they? What role are they trying to fill? And he's kind of what we've referred to as Brett Stoven Light,
right?
Where he's the guy that's going to give you 110, 120% every single game. Also, fun fact, he's exactly 3 years younger than me. We have the same birthday.
Oh, well, there you go.
That was another thing. But he's a guy that gives you 110, 120% every single game. He's gritty. He's strong. He's a great net front presence. He's part of the reason why that Bison's power play is so good. And I was tearing my hair out for 2 years watching him play on this team and not getting the power play and penalty kill chances that I know he can. But he's he's not like an all-world, world-beater kind of player, but he's a guy that gives you what you want, does what you ask of him, and he does those little things. You know, Evan and I talk about it all the time. It's the little things. It's getting your stick in the right position. It's standing in the right spot. It's knowing when to make a certain play, put it off the wall, take it to the wall to kill some time, or pressure somebody to the outside, or when you're just doing the right things when you don't have the puck. Colton does those things. And we're seeing this year a lot more trust from Mike Sarant, and he's basically taking that ball and sprinting down the field with it.
Well, I mean, the good news is that it looks like Canada's sending over two fairly competitive teams. We'll start with the men's hockey side. And there's a lot of Canada West players as well on this team, Colton being one of them. He'll be joined by two Calgary Dinos in Ryan Gagnon and Ryan Graham, who, again, you've seen a little bit mm-hmm. of those two play.
Very good.
And joined by four Saskatchewan Huskies as Gordy Ballhorn, Jared Dimitru, Connor Hobbs,
and Donovan Niles will all go to
Lucerne, Switzerland with this Team Canada FIZU team.
Not at all surprised that those four have made that list.
But
not
I'm surprised shocked. At all. I'm shocked. And again, I understand they're competing for a national championship. I'm not going to fault them for doing this, but I am shocked that Alberta, UBC, and Mount Royal did not have anybody on these teams, only because it sounds like, and I can't say this to be certain, but it sounds like maybe they didn't release any players.
Potentially, like I would say, if you're Mount Royal, I can totally see you want your Remco, Sawchuk, Lindgren to stay home, stay healthy, don't rock the boat. But I think Riley Lindgren has proven that he deserves a chance to showcase himself on the biggest stage possible to him right now. I think same thing with Nolan. Like these guys are guys that are going to go on and probably take a shot at the professional ranks when their U Sport career is over. Let them go over there. Let them, because this is a Mount Royal team that hasn't been able to do a whole heck of a lot. These guys haven't been able to play at, you know, a national championship. A lot of them haven't had a chance to play at FIZU. Many of them haven't had a chance to play professionally. Give them that opportunity at the very least, so they can take that experience and bring it back. If you're in Mount Royal's position, especially, let them go over, get that experience, bring it back, and throw that in the face of Saskatchewan and UBC and Alberta and say, okay, we know, we see what you've been seeing for a while. Let's go.
Gardner McDougal, who's the head coach of UNB, is coaching. So you expect maybe him to take a few hometown players with him. He's taking five.
Yeah.
five varsity Reds are going over there. It's not like they're any good or anything. I mean, they only, you know, end up in the final basically every year of the national championship. But along with that, though, and this is where things get kind of crazy, because I was like, what are you doing here, man? The rest of the team is basically from the AUS. St. Mary's, Acadia, St. Francis Xavier, UPEI, all sending players over. There are legitimately from the OUA, from the, again, the OUA is a little bit different from the women's side, but the OUA for men, there's legitimately like five players going from there. There are like 12 players going from the AUS. And again, none of them are bad. None of them are, I'm not trying to rip on any of these players for Coach McDougal for selecting any of them. But you look at this and you go, he knows this team better than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And
I think that's part of the reason.
Right. I was going to say, he's going to get results over there because they've gone over, they won bronze last time in 2019. I think he's looking at, if I'm going, I'm not coming home unless it's gold.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. You're balancing it with, you go with the AUS guys, you know, you see them night in and night out. These are some of your players, players that you've played against for a while. So you know them. And then on the Canada West side, what do we always say when Nationals comes around? What is everybody talking about Canada West? They play strong, gritty, fast, tough hockey. Yep. And it's the kind of stuff that you want in a short tournament like that, where you're playing against international competition who don't see this. Like, Canada West players are hard to play against. So yeah, grab the best ones you can, the grittiest ones you can, supplement, bring that in to supplement the talent from the AUS that you know, and you know how they play, and throw it out there against these other countries and see what happens.
I'm pretty intrigued. I know maybe some people think might be thinking, or we're thinking this a little bit. I'm pretty intrigued by the fact that he has a guy who sat on the Maple Leafs bench this year going with him. Alex Bishop, the Toronto Varsity Blues netminder. But the two guys he selected from the AUS, Logan Flodell and Ryan Parenteau, are both former WHL guys. Mm-hmm. So you look at that and you go, okay, well, obviously they're recruiting pretty heavily out in the AUS from Western Canada. They want some of those guys to come out and play, obviously. But you look at that and you go, you're going to have a tough decision to make because Bishop's a pretty darn good goaltender in Toronto, combined with the Acadia goaltender and the UNB goaltender. Do you sit your own guy for some of these games? Because I'm pretty certain Ryan Parenteau is going to get a chunk of the action, and whether he likes it or not, simply because, again, he's McDougal's guy, right?
Yeah, I don't. It's kind of like an embarrassment of riches from a goaltending standpoint. Like, if I'm going to sit anybody, maybe Flodell.
You look at his numbers, though. And again, this is where Flodell comes in. My first year wasn't that great. Last year, 16-9. He was a 279, 918 goalie. And you go, all right, Flodell can play. Like, he's got a little bit of skill to him or whatever. You look at Parenteau, though. Parenteau hasn't lost more than two games in a season in the 3 years he's been at UNB so far. 186, 907 last year behind that incredible UNB team.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, okay, well, Parenteau's probably got the option then, right? Like, they're not going to say no to him, right? Like, that would be crazy to say no to Parenteau in terms of him getting the start. But then you go to Alex Bishop and you go, my lord, like
241.922.
Right. Like, even he's good. 19-5 last year behind University of Toronto. He's at 241.922, as you said. Again, you really have no holes when it comes to the goaltenders that you're taking over there. Again, Flodell might be the weakest of the very good goaltenders you're taking with you.
Exactly.
This is almost like, and I hate to say it, it's almost a Canadian Olympic team in terms of, you know, they take the three best goaltenders they can find and you got to sit one of them. How do you sit Marc-Andre Fleury? Oh, because we got Carey Price and we got, you know, Roberto Luongo. Like, yeah. It's not that hard to make that decision. But you look at Canada's goaltending and you just go, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. It speaks to the talent level of U Sport and what it's gotten to, where it's just like, all right, there aren't very many holes on this team.
No, there is none that I can see in terms of the way that they play. And again, you look at some of the guys that he's taking, and you're exactly right in terms of the way you set it up and talked about it as well. But even some of the guys that maybe people aren't so aware of, Kyle Maksimovich from UPEI, dude was an outstanding player in the OHL, ripped it up with the Erie Otters for the longest time. And now he goes to UPEI and he's basically scoring at like, you know, 1.5 points per game. You're going to get all your score. Again, I'm not taking anything away from Jared Dimitro. I'm not taking away from any of the guys from Calgary. I'm not taking anything away from Colton Veloso. You're right in that he's probably going to get a very large chunk of scoring out of those guys from the AUS, while the guys from Manitoba, the guys from Saskatchewan, guys from Calgary are going to be the guys that legitimately are going to do a lot of dirty work and earn a lot of those sort of quote unquote, you know, dirty goals where they go to the high traffic areas, I think. Yeah. And if it works, and don't get me wrong, I don't think it's not going to work, but if it works against teams like Russia and the US and all that kind of stuff, great, perfect. The very first game that Canada plays, though, and this is where I think things need to be sort of kept in perspective, is Estonia. This is Estonia's first entry ever into the FISU men's hockey competition.
I'm sorry, Estonia. I'm sorry.
Like, Estonia is not going to know what hits them when you get run over by this Canadian team, simply because this Canadian team is built to win.
Even their checking forwards can score.
Right.
If you put Donovan Niles and Jared Dimitru in a third or fourth line role for this team, they're still going to score because Jared Dimitru slices through defense like a hot knife through butter, and Donovan Niles will just grind you down in the corners and like break through.
But even their defense, I mean, Connor Hobbs is essentially a fourth forward out there too.
Oh yeah.
Man. So like I said, I mean, I'm shocked that I'm not shocked, I guess. I'm pleased that they went with such a good team there, but I was a little shocked that, you know, there was a ton of hardly any OUA players whatsoever. So it's clear that Gardner McDougal knows what he's doing. On the women's side, this is where things get a little crazy here, because the women have taken a very interesting approach, considering that I don't expect this team to be a John Rempel team, despite the fact that John Rempel is coaching it.
Yeah.
Which, and I mean, say that,
like,
and
congratulations to John.
Oh yeah, huge, huge congratulations to John. I mean, that he's definitely earned that right. He's been around forever, and he certainly had the success at the U Sports level. But it's not the kind of team that I see John. And this is nothing, take nothing away from the players. It's just not the way that John builds his team. He's going to have a very good team. The team will score goals. This team will have find a way to put all sorts of pucks in nets because there's all sorts. They have excellent goaltending. But I look at this team at the end of the day and I just go, it doesn't look like a John team.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the catch, is that if it's not a John team, the other women that are going with him, and that's Kelly Payton and Sarah Hillworth, might be able to sort of massage a little bit more out of this team than what John can get out of them.
Yeah, and that's why you bring, you know, talented coaches along with you to address that. I think John is a smart guy. Like, he knows, you know, he's got to bring from those conferences what he needs to. He knows, I mean, we know John doesn't, he focuses on the next game and the game after that.
Right.
He doesn't bother himself with all of the extraneous stuff and the top 10 rankings and how the other conferences are doing. He just worries about what's right in front of him, and that's Canada West. So he's like, okay, I've got coach from here. Tell me what you know. Bring in the players that you think will help us.
So Kelly, I mean, obviously has some experience with Wilfrid Laurier. I mean, they won a couple national championships. Sarah Hillworth won national championships as a player with the University of Alberta Pandas. And then obviously John's coached a team to a national championship here in Manitoba. So the coaching staff is going to be very experienced, very, again, in all sorts of situations. I look at the back end and I go, okay, the goaltending is going to be great. Kirsten Chamberlain, we're already aware of. We know how well she plays. Like, there's no doubt about that. Kendra Woodland is leading UNB on an incredible run this year. She's 8-2 this season already on the for the year. And then you look at Ottawa's goaltending and Aurelle DeBuck. I mean, we don't really know a lot about her, only because, again, we don't really hear a lot from the RSEC, but she has Ottawa right now sitting in third place in the RSEC. And you go, Ottawa in third place, that's never happened before. No, it hasn't. And that's the thing, is that they're getting some good goaltending. Defensively, they're going to be all right. Huge congratulations to Lauren Workington, who was selected to go as well as one of the defenders. This team is going to be able to move the puck very well up front. They've got great forwards as well. And again, the players that are going from Canada West, Bailey Barassa, for example, can obviously put pucks in that. We have never had a problem with that in terms of her doing that. Madison Willen, Anna Pershke, Shaylee McConnell, all great players that are going. I don't see very many holes on this Canadian team either. They're the current reigning silver medalists after losing to Russia in 2019. I'm thinking this team is coming back with a gold medal, if not a gold medal, then certainly a silver. I think this team is playing in the final, regardless of what anybody tries to do out there, because I just look at this team and I go, they're going to find a way. Like, this team they'll find a way. There's a lot of French players, a lot of players from the OUA that, you know, a little bit slower. But again, we're talking about players like Maria Domenico, who won Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago. Like, she was the best rookie in Canada. We're talking about Gabrielle DeSeris, who's playing defense from Toronto. We saw her play. She was outstanding a couple of years ago when we saw her play. We're talking about Erica Krause from Ryerson. We're talking about, you know, Caitlin Hepner from Nipissing. Like, there are some very good players. Tyra Maropoulos, who I think she won the goal scoring lead last year. She was a player of the year, or U Sports player of the year. Like, we're talking about very good players that are going over there. And I'd be surprised if they don't come back with some sort of hardware. Like, it would shock me entirely, considering it's only a 16 bizu for them. But this team should win gold.
Yeah,
In theory.
Both teams.
Would be great, yes. I'm not taking anything away from that. Both teams should win. For the women, they don't start until Saturday, December 11th. The men start on the 10th. Again, they have that game against Estonia. The women start on the 11th. They play Japan. Then they play Switzerland, U.S., Kazakhstan. Their final game in the preliminaries is on Friday against Russia. People should be circling that on their calendar right now, because that game against Russia might be the preview of the gold medal final.
Yeah, and it's always good when Canada goes up against Russia.
And the key in that is that Russia, the day before, plays against the U.S.
Ooh.
So that could be an interesting setup if the other North American team lends a little body checking, maybe a little bruising for Russia at that point. Canada might get a bit of a, but again, take nothing away from Russia. Russia will come back hard in the medal round. So I don't know. I look at this and I go, there are some very good players that are going to be going over to Lucerne, Switzerland for Canada, both men's and women's. I got to say right now, I'm thinking gold medal for both at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
So from Fizu, which is in Lucerne, Switzerland, if anybody's planning on doing anything over the holidays, it runs from technically the 10th, but the 11th to the 21st in terms of the opening ceremonies to closing ceremonies, 11th to 21st in December. There's a nice break in there, obviously, for kids coming back and getting ready to get going again in the second half. Because again, for Canada West, we don't start again until the 13th and 14th of January. So a couple of weeks off there, and obviously there's a chance to get everything sort of going after that. But I'm looking forward to this. I mean, I'm going to keep track of it here on this show and certainly on Hockey Blog in Canada as well and see exactly what's going on with it. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll keep everything going for that. One team that's not invited to Fizu, and they don't have a team, and that's okay, but they may not even be invited to their own Olympics, is China. We were talking about this before the show, and I know both you and I were going, this is insanity, but it's come down to the fact that the IIHF, under new IIHF president, Luke Tardif, they've determined that they don't believe that China's going to be competitive enough in their own Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Now, we can talk about how bad that would be for the IIHF and for the IOC because they gave China these Olympics. But as I said to you, Jason, before we started recording, this is like giving the Olympics to Jamaica and expecting them to win a gold medal in bobsled. Like it just doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. Like this is a granted, everybody is trying to get to corner the Chinese market. All the different sports are trying to get in there. I mean, Guang Yuzhou was just announced as the first Chinese Formula One driver this weekend, but like, and that caused waves. The IIHF and the NHL and the KHL have been trying so hard to get hockey to work there, and it's still not working. We're still years away.
Well,
and China would have an opportunity to have a somewhat competitive team. Not like getting in out of, you know, the round robins competitive, but like one that could push a couple of the other lower end teams and maybe stick around for a little bit. Like, but they're obviously not doing that.
So, but the problem again is that, again, we'll talk about the men's team first because the women's team is a little bit different, but the men's team, it has 19 Canadians on the team. 19 Canadian dual citizenship and all that. The problem, though, is that China's trying to figure out who's going to be able to play because they have such restrictive rules on dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. So if you don't live in China, basically, they're making it far more difficult for those players to participate as a Chinese citizen for the Chinese hockey team, which, okay, you can say whatever you want about that, but Kazakhstan doesn't seem to have a problem bringing on Canadians and having them play. So whatever. Like, it's all about the country's sort of reluctance to loosen its grip on citizenship or, you know, maybe do a couple of sweetheart deals behind the scene, pat everybody on the back and go, okay, our team's ready.
Yeah.
Because in Korea, we saw that happen. We saw that happen with a few Korean players that went over and played for Korea. But I look at this and I just go, there is no right way to do this because as of right now, and again, we talked about the KHL and the season that they're having, they're dead last in the KHL right now.
Mm-hmm.
Dead last. Like not
and
even
that's the team that's not even gonna quote unquote go.
Right. Like they're terrible. They've allowed 110 goals in 29 games.
If it was the last Olympics when there were not NHL players there, maybe.
Possibly,
maybe this time out, when you've got that stacked Canadian roster, that stacked Swedish roster, that stacked Finnish roster, that stacked US roster, that stacked Russian roster, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Like, it's the reason that these other smaller teams, the Frances, the Denmarks, even, you know, Poland, Slovenia, like, the reason that they come in, the reason a Latvia can come in and shock Canada and almost beat them is because they have those players that go out, develop somewhere else, and they come back to play.
So there's been a lot of discussion about what do they do, and this is where the IIHF has to make a decision. They are legitimately going to make a decision next Thursday. Wednesday or Thursday? Well, Thursday we'll know what the answer is, I guess, but as to whether or not China will be allowed to participate in their own hockey tournament at the Olympics that they host.
Yeah, because the IIHF, I think it was 2 weeks ago, said with the roster that they had, we're going to play.
Right. They basically, when Rene Fossil, before he left, he basically, Grant said, yeah, you know, there's not going to be a problem here. And then Luke Tardif comes in and goes, yeah, hold on a second here. Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. We want to have a good tournament, not just a tournament.
Yeah.
So Dave King, who has coached over in China and has coached in a number of places across the world, basically has said that this is going to come down to whether or not China wants to be embarrassed at their own Olympics.
Yeah, which I think, knowing China, they probably don't want to be embarrassed at their own Olympics because it's who they are. And like, it's just what breaks first?
So
do you want to be embarrassed?
Right.
Or do you want to actually play?
So King compared it to his own experience with Japan at the Nagano Olympics in 1998, because he was the general manager of that team. Hockey was obviously a little bit different. Things were structured a little differently, blah, 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 blah. Japan played in a group against Belarus, France, and Germany before playing and winning against Austria. They ended up 13th out of 14 teams in that tournament. Mm-hmm. Again, he's not saying that he was embarrassed. He's not saying the team was embarrassed. But to have China play against teams in a pool that contain the US, that contain Canada, that contain Russia, that contain Sweden, that contain Finland. I mean, let's just throw the name out there. If they contain Germany, it's going to be a blowout.
Well, that's the group that they're in. They're in the Canada, USA, Germany group.
Right. But this is what I mean.
The number one country in the world, their number one rival, and the team that won silver last Olympics.
But this is the problem that you look at now, and you go, what do you do with China if that's the case? And again, the IIHF's plan is to have the next highest ranked team not in the Olympics replace them, which would be Norway. To be honest, if they don't have China in there, I don't expect Chinese TV to be covering the hockey event at all, because they don't. And if our team's not playing, if our country's not playing, who cares, right? But if Norway gets in there, yeah, the tournament's going to be better, but your growth of hockey in China dies at that point.
Yep. And this is why the NHL allowed players to play, because they want to showcase the best players in the world, NHL players, on the Chinese stage. And now that's in danger, because China and the IIHF are butting heads over the roster for this team.
Right. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I know, and we'll sort of switch this over to the women's side now, because it kind of ties in with a little bit of that as well. The women have had an easier time attracting talent. And I'll say that only because, again, there's not a lot of barriers that stopped Chinese heritage women who have Chinese heritage, from getting into the game when they were younger. And because the game's a little newer for the women's hockey side, in terms of, you know, having, you know, far less history than what the men's side does, in terms of just, you know, generation after generation after generation of non-Chinese players playing, there have been women who have Chinese heritage who have been allowed to come over, join the Chinese team in China and play for them. No problem with that. Like there's absolutely no issue with that. However, the Chinese team that's playing right now in the women's hockey league over in the professional women's hockey league over in Russia isn't that good either. And that's taking nothing away from them. That's not saying that they're bad. They're 6 out of 10 teams right now, and they're a few points behind fifth place, but no big deal. The catch, though, is that in order for China to get more players playing, more players onto that team and playing, they had to cut legitimate stars from that team, players like Megan Bozek, players like Alex Carpenter, which made that team far more competitive. And so you look at this and you go, how bad is China going to get beat on the women's side now? And again, the women's side is not the concern. This is men's hockey that they're talking about in terms of pulling that team out, in terms of removing that team. But when you look at the Chinese women's team and you look at the teams that qualified, we'll talk about them in a second, Denmark, Sweden, and the Czechs that have all qualified. Is China able to beat any of those teams? Probably not.
I certainly don't think so. So they're still ranked lower than the teams that qualified after them.
So the question becomes, why are we giving Winter Olympics to, and again, this isn't just about this is bigger than hockey now, because we're talking about bobsled. We're talking about, outside of maybe figure skating, outside of maybe some sort of, you know, something so artistic in terms of what's going on. Outside of that, bobsled, we've got, you know, alpine skiing. We've got all sorts of stuff that needs to be done in that Olympic time frame. Why are we giving Winter Olympics to places like China when they aren't going to be competitive in the sports that draw eyes to the to those sports? And that's the thing, is that if you want those sports to grow in China, you have to get eyes on them.
Yeah. And the, it takes an understanding and an investment that they're going to be there, that they're going to start to grow. Like, this is what we've been talking about this on the women's side for years. It's like, you have to put the money and the time and the effort in to make this something in these countries.
Yeah, I agree.
And China, I don't know if they're putting their eggs in too many baskets or, you know, what's going on here, but they had something, they had a solution that they were going to go for. They had a workable solution. There were guys on that team, and there are definitely women on the women's team that are proud to represent China. On the men's side, they're not allowed to play.
Well, and I mean, when you talk about not allowed to play, like, again, we're talking about guys that have to surrender their passports if they want to play. Like, they can't go back home if that's the case. They're now officially Chinese citizens, and they cannot be Canadian citizens anymore. That's, and you just look at
like
that.
Spencer Fu, Cliff Poo, Jason Fram from the Alberta Golden Bears. Like, you know, you've got legitimate, talented players that could potentially go elsewhere, who, because of where they're from and where their families are from, they decided, yeah, I'm going to go here. I'm going to go here for a chance to represent the country of my family at the Olympics. And now they're being forced to essentially choose, stay here forever or you don't get to play, which is just, to me, ridiculous.
So since the decision was made earlier this week by the IIHF, they basically told the Red Star, the men's team from China, the men's Red Star team, that they would be coming to China to evaluate how they're playing. Technically, they don't play in China anymore. They're playing outside Russia because of some of the restrictions in China. Yeah. So they're heading to Russia, technically, the IIHF. But they're going to go, again, they want to see how this team is going to play. So Monday, the Red Star played against Amur, again, who's just a bad team in the KHL as well. Went down 4-0, rallied back to tie it, then lost in overtime 5-4. Okay, so they're not okay. We showed a little life there. They went in and played a very good team in Avangard Omsk after that, and Avangard beat them 4-1. Like, Avangard didn't have to sweat much in that one.
Yeah, they Omsk is a fantastic team,
right?
I mean, maybe not this year, but like,
well, they're the reigning Gagarin Cup champions. So, I mean, they obviously have some talent, which is great.
Yeah.
The next game that they play is against Vitez, which is not going to be, again, Vitez is a terrible team in the West, in the Western Conference as well. But Vitez has a bunch of former mid-level AHL to NHL players.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to go well. And that's on Saturday.
It's definitely not.
Okay, and we still have, again, we're still talking about, you know, about this team still needs to be evaluated, you know, moving forward. They play Dynamo Moscow on Monday the 22nd. Dynamo Moscow has lots of money and lots of talent.
that's one of the top teams in the KHL.
Right, yeah.
They're going to get smacked around.
So if we're talking about this team going 0-4 prior to the decision, is there any chance that the IIHF is going to step back and go, yeah, you know what? We might have been a little quick. No, they're legitimately going to say, sorry, guys, Norway's coming, but you're not.
Yeah. But like, here's the other part of that, right? Because this is going from, because it's China, it's turning into a political game. So what's going to stop China from, because the players still have to clear customs, still have to get through, still have to land in the country. What's stopping China from turning back every single hockey player that comes through?
Okay, I'll go one step further then, because the entire premise of them funding, having the Chinese Hockey Federation funding the Kulin Red Star men's and women's team, the entire premise was to have these teams compete for an Olympic medal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to compete for an Olympic medal. They're not even going to compete for an Olympic playoff spot at this point because of the way that they're built. In saying that, if the men's team, for sure, if they get booted from the Olympics, do you think their funding is going to continue?
Definitely not.
So if their funding doesn't continue, then what's the point of trying to grow hockey in China? Like, we're legitimately, and I don't want to say dumping money into a fire, but we're legitimately dumping money into a fire right now because China is basically built this ridiculous idea that if they just keep pouring money into stuff, it'll work. And it doesn't work because you don't have the talent. You've never developed the talent, nor is 6 years enough to really, you know, come up with the next Connor McDavid, the Chinese Connor McDavid, for example.
Because these other countries are 50, 60 years ahead of you.
Right. And this is where I look at it and I go, if you pull the funding from the men's side, the women have no chance.
Oh, definitely.
Which means that all of this progress that we keep pretending to hear about, that they keep talking about, is all for naught. Because if there's no funding, there are no teams.
Yeah. It's just like it's a no-win situation, really. Like, it's a no-win situation where, sure, the IIHF lets them go. Let's China play. They get absolutely embarrassed. And as a reaction, China just says, okay, this is over. I'm not trying this again. And all of those teams are gone. And if, like, it, regardless, if they allow China to send the team that they want to send, they're going to get embarrassed. If they send the team that they've been building and that has been playing together, they might not exactly get embarrassed, but they're still going to get smacked around.
So, I mean, if you want to talk embarrassed, then let's, because we got about 10 minutes left, let's talk about the next step, because as we know, the Olympics are happening in Beijing. And again, they're not moving at this point. They can't be moved. Everything is set and basically ready to go as per the IOC. Except for COVID. Because if you're talking about the NHL coming over, and Ottawa's outbreak this week is not good for the NHL, but it shouldn't stop NHLers from going. And I'll say that as nicely as I can. It should not. But here's the catch. And again, we already know that there's some shady stuff happening behind the scenes when it comes to China and some of the stuff that they do over there and some of the stuff that they, whatever. If they're holding the Olympics and you're found to have a positive test, positive COVID-19 test, you have to quarantine for 3 weeks.
Bye-bye tournament.
Bye-bye any competition at that point, because if it's any competition that has a positive test, basically you have to basically quarantine that person as soon as possible. If you don't, and there are a couple other ones, what's to say that China's going to want to have the competition going at all then? Yeah. And you look at this and you go, maybe this is not a good idea this year.
Well, I mean, we said it about the Summer Olympics and they still went ahead.
Well, and the Summer Olympics, at least you were okay with, because all right, like, they can get away with a few things there. And certainly there were some good precautions put in place. But again, people were crazy when you saw them standing out, and, you know, watching the marathon race, for example, and they're all huddled together. Yeah. We're talking about cold weather stuff now. People are going to be huddled together, whether they like it or not. Right. Like, this has to happen. Mm-hmm. And I just go, if this is going to open up the door to all sorts of COVID problems again, where we have, you know, sport shut down, athletes not, 3 weeks is the minimum. You can't even leave your room. You leave your hotel room, leave your Olympic Village room for 3 weeks, which means you, even if your sport is over, you still can't go home.
Yeah, you're stuck there. I mean, like, and again, we're putting it at, because obviously the IOC has their own rules. They have their own protocols for COVID and everything.
Right. Yeah.
But it's, again, in most cases, the country would defer to the IOC and their protocols. Good luck making that fly in China. Good luck. It was difficult enough to convince South Korea, because South Korea has some of the best pandemic mitigation strategies and structures in place.
Yeah.
They still got hammered by COVID.
Right.
But they were like, okay, we'll let the IOC do their thing. We'll have the Olympics. It basically came down to the wire whether it was going to happen or not, but it happened. Good luck having that happen in China.
I don't know. Again, if you're the IOC and you anger China enough, you anger China that they don't want to, they're just going to kind of throw up their hands and go, whatever, do whatever you want. I'm not saying they're going to be vengeful and have all sorts of positive cases pop up from athletes around the world, but I also don't want to tempt that option either. Right. Like yeah. That's, you can't, having their team not play is embarrassing enough. Having their team play and getting blown out every game might be the lesser of two evils.
I mean, yeah.
I'm just
maybe,
saying that
maybe it'll have the opposite impact we think it does. They go and they get blown out, and all of these young Chinese kids look at it and say, "That's never happening again. I'm going to be better than that." Who knows?
Again, I'm just saying the lesser of two evils here might be to let them play, and you hope for the best at that point.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if you want to have China fighting the IOC at this point. So I guess we'll see, though. We'll see what happens.
And money talks.
Money does talk, and that's exactly it. I mean, maybe the idea is that, and again, I know that the Olympics are a big ripoff anyway, and that 90%, but the next one's in Paris. So maybe things will go a little bit better in Paris.
One of the few countries that'll probably make money and not lose money on tournament.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Hopefully things go well in Beijing. I'm excited for Lucerne, Switzerland. Obviously, that's a big one for the FISU athletes that are going over there. So congratulations to all the FISU U Sports athletes that are heading over there. I do want to mention that big announcement came out on Wednesday about one official that we've had on this show, one person that we've had on this show that we're happy to say that we know here. Amy Martin, who does a lot of the Canada West games for Manitoba in terms of working those games as both a referee and I guess just as a referee. She doesn't really work as a lines person anymore. But Amy Martin was selected to go to the 2021 Capital City Challenge in Ottawa, Ontario from November 26th to December 1st. That's the challenge that features the Team Canada women's hockey team against the three under 17 teams from that area. So congratulations to Amy for being selected to go down there by Hockey Canada. That's huge.
Awesome.
Yeah, good for her. Beyond that, obviously some hockey coming back up this weekend in this city, obviously for the men's hockey team. Jason, you want to give a little promo for that before we get out of here?
Yeah, totally. Friday and Saturday, 19th and 20th, Mount Royal University Cougars coming to visit the Manitoba Bisons. Puck drop 7 p.m. on Friday. Pre-game show starts at 6:30. Then we are back Saturday for a 3 p.m. start. 2:30 is the pre-game show. Just tune into the UMFM second stream to follow along with Evan and I. And if you've got Canada West TV, you can tune in and watch as well.
Yeah, that'll be good. Obviously, seeing Mount Royal come in, they always have a good team, and it's always a good time to see them play a little hacky because they know how to play fairly well. So we'll see if Manitoba can maybe handle them a little bit, and they desperately need a win, so let's hope they get it. The women are out in Calgary. They will play against the Mount Royal Cougars at Flames Community Arena as they look to take down the first place Mount Royal Cougars in a first versus second matchup early in this season. They've had a couple of those already where UBC and Manitoba tangled, now Mount Royal and Manitoba are tangling, but Manitoba has a chance really to build some momentum going into that Alberta series coming up next weekend that we'll be on the air for with Kylie Palmer and I. So looking forward to that as well. Hopefully Manitoba can figure out the Cougars because they're playing extremely well right now. Got a couple of high scoring players on that team. I don't want to call them the KO sisters, but Coleman and Co are legitimately lighting the lamp all over the place. 5 goals apiece for those two right now.
Yeah, just fantastic. Tiana is a fantastic player.
Oh, like,
always, like every time Mount Royal would come to town, I'd be like, all right, she's the player to watch right now.
Yeah, she's fun. And I know that, you know, again, we had Tatum Amy on. She was talking about how good she is as well. So it'll be interesting because Tatum and Courtney have found some chemistry early to get things. Aaliyah Joma as well has been playing really well out there. So, I mean, it'll be tough for Manitoba this weekend, I think, in terms of trying to figure everything out. But we'll see if the Bison ladies can figure it out before Alberta comes here the following week. Beyond that, want to give a shout out to the three countries as well, Denmark, Sweden, and the Czech Republic, who qualified for the Olympics. They did that this week as well. Unfortunately, Emma Bergeson from those Mount Royal Cougars did not qualify with Norway. As they were in the pool with the Czechs, they fell just short. So she'll be back to compete for a national championship rather than playing the Olympics in February, unfortunately.
I mean, still, still a good consolation if you can pull it off.
If you're listening to the show, though, a chance to go see an Olympic, at least Olympic qualification athlete anyway, where Emma likely would have been playing for Norway in the Olympics had she qualified, the country qualified at that point. So it would have been good to see her play a little bit more. But get down to Flames Community Arena and catch Emma and the Cougars as they host the Bisons this week. Jason, just about out of time here. Anything you want to promote before we go?
Just, you know, tune in Friday and Saturday for some good old Canada West men's hockey.
That'll do it for this show, folks. Thanks for tuning in here. Again, as Jason said, tune in for some Bisons hockey this weekend on the second stream here on UMFM. You can find that over on UMFM.com. With that, folks, we're out of here for another week. Have a good one. We'll see you next Thursday here on The Hockey Show.
Right now, boys, how about a little dinner music?
Nowadays, people tend to look over the real art of DJing. DJing.
You
DJing.
Are tuned in to CJUM FM. Here we are, 101.5.
This winter, the town of Stonewall is transforming Kinsman Lake at Quarry Park into an outdoor hockey rink for the first time ever. This great, fun-filled family weekend taking place from February 18th through the 20th will feature a Save Pond Hockey celebrity game with Canadian hockey legend Haley Wickenheiser, a pond hockey tournament, skills competitions, a hockey and sustainable items marketplace, family skating, a beverage garden, live music, and oh so much more. Check out umfm.com or outdoorhockey.club to find out how to register your squad today. Play hockey in the great outdoors while protecting your community for future generations. Help stick it to climate change. Sign up for the Save Pond Hockey 3-on-3 tournament today.